This episode of the Coin Spice Podcast is brought to you by Cash Shuffle, because what you do with your money is your business. To give this new product a try for fungibility and privacy, head on over to electroncash.org, download their latest wallet 4.0.0, and give it a spin. CashShuffle.com for more information, because what you do with your money is your business.
What is really going on, Crypto Savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, Editor-in-Chief out of Coinspice.io. Back with another episode of the Coinspice Podcast, and this time around I've got Bitcoin Unlimited's Chief Scientist, Peter Risen. Dr. Risen is a kind of a heroic figure, I guess, in the Bitcoin Cash community, especially one of these guys that always has a very sober voice, kind of the adult in the room. He has come under some controversy of late, especially in the last couple of months, and so I've dubbed him the human lightning rod. Not only did he step into it with the Bitcoin core people over the Lightning Network, but also with our own community and some of the problems with what some people perceive as Bitcoin Unlimited's being soft, I guess, on the issue of lawsuits and developers. I give Risen a chance to kind of address all those things. I think he's a force for good in Bitcoin Cash, and I think ultimately he comes down on the right side each time. He's also just a fantastic educator on the issue of Lightning, and I get some kind of cool background. This is his first interview since the controversial What Bitcoin Did podcast episode with Peter McCormick, if you were paying any attention to that. So fun stuff. I think you'll really enjoy it. Sit back, grab yourself a cool glass of milk, and enjoy Dr. Peter Risen, Chief Scientist from Bitcoin Unlimited, right now.
What is really going on, Crypto Savages? You are listening to the CoinSpice Podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, Editor-in-Chief at CoinSpice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
Thank you very much for doing this, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You came back into, you know, you're always kind of floating out there, part of the intellectual debate, keeping everybody grounded, and I've always appreciated your voice generally as the more sober take, kind of the adult in the room. You sort of elevate the conversation, and boy, did you step into it. I now refer to you as the human lightning rod because you got on Twitter, and I didn't know, in this case, Peter McCormick had reached out to you for a podcast interview. I didn't know until you tweeted, just asking innocently, you know, sort of crowdsourcing, hive minding it, however you want to throw it out there. Like, hey, you know, Peter McCormick is a you know, a BTC guy. He's reaching, you know, beyond the bubble and the echo chamber here. He's reaching out to me as someone who is a critic of the Lightning Network for his series. And do you guys have any suggestions? And ooh-wee, did you kick a hornet's nest? Can you go into that a little bit and take us back to that early March post and kind of what happened as a result?
Sure. Well, how about we start a little bit before that?
Sure.
Actually, so I received an email. Actually, I think it was on Twitter. I think it was a Twitter DM from Peter McCormick saying, "Hey, Peter, I was wondering if you would like to present the con case of Lightning. I'm doing a podcast series on Lightning this month, and it would be great to have someone present a critical analysis of the technology." At that time, I hadn't actually listened to any of Peter McCormick's podcasts, but I kind of knew the name, and I knew he was, you know, kind of making waves in the Bitcoin world. So I looked into it, and I thought, okay, I like this guy. He seems to, you know, he definitely had this big block bias. He seemed to support Core, but he was coming at things from an open mind, and he wasn't, you know, attacking any of his guests. That might present a con case. I felt he did a very, very, very neutral job of interviewing people.
He's very affable, isn't he? He's sort of the everyman. You know, he's slung back in tattoos. He's not afraid to use words like fuck and shit after every, you know, to punctuate sentences. He's a very likable guy.
Exactly. And I looked at this as an opportunity to present the negative side of Lightning to an audience that I was, you know, kind of barred from interacting with due to the censorship on our Bitcoin and things like that. So anyways, I responded back to Peter McCormick, you know, saying that, you know, I would love to do this. It's a great opportunity. But before I agree, you know, let's talk about, you know, the format of the interview. So he said, okay, well, it's not going to be, you know, I'm not going to try to trap you. You can come on the show. It'll just be me interviewing you. It won't be like a debate format or anything like that, which is what I wanted to hear. I didn't want to be like trapped in some kind of this mess where there's, you know, this other person who's going to be like attacking me and the whole show turns into right. some long show. So I agreed to that. And then the next day I posted on Twitter. Let me backtrack a bit there. So at the time I agreed, I had done, you know, some research into Lightning Network. I had already made up my mind that it wasn't going to be a workable scaling solution for Bitcoin. But if I was going to go on this podcast, I wanted to, you know, have my facts and my arguments really dialed in. So I wanted to spend, I probably spent 80 hours preparing for that interview. And I'm working on an article as well that's going to come out later. So I wanted to do some background research so I could present a really compelling, honest, and objective take on why Lightning is a bad scaling solution. So as part of that research, I posted on Twitter, you know, guys, help me out. What do you think is negative about Lightning Network? And oh boy, did that cause drama. So I guess the core people saw, oh, Peter Risen is going to be on Peter McCormick's show talking about the negative side of Lightning Network. This is terrible. So it, I actually blew my mind how much it exploded. Like when I would log into to Twitter, I would have like, you know, like 500 notifications, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Well, there's just so much anger about this idea that I'm going to go on Peter McCormick's show and talk about the negatives of Lightning. And I'm thinking, Peter invited me to do this. So it was very strange. Eventually, Peter, he cracked under pressure. And the day later, he says, okay, I've decided this is too controversial. I'm not going to interview Peter Risen about Lightning Network. And I was pretty annoyed at this point because already I had spent the whole weekend researching Lightning. So I'm like, oh my God, I just wasted my whole weekend.
And people, for people who are listening, this is not a trivial matter that Risen is, I'm not trying to be too informal here, but we get to the Peters and then it starts to become a shit show in terms of who I'm talking about. But as Mr. Risen, Dr. Risen is explaining here, these aren't trivial things. When you set aside a bulk of time, you're a busy dude and someone asks to, you know, command some of it and you come to an agreement and you sit down and you pour yourself into it, you know, and then it was so strange to me. Well, first off, kudos to him for publicly acknowledging it, because a lot of these guys are snakes and they weasel out of things and it becomes this weird sort of back channel discussion. So kudos to McCormick for going on Twitter and saying, hey, it's just too I just don't want to touch it. I'm bowing out. But my first thought was like, dude, like I thought you were like the man, like, you know, I don't give an F guy and I've got tattoos, listen to Guns N' Roses, and this Canadian egghead, pardon the expression, this guy who just wants to talk to you about Lightning Network and geek out for an hour or whatever, that is going to scare you off? I mean, I found that amazing.
Yeah, well, me too. I actually took it as a compliment. I mean, these people from the small block core side are just so scared for me to have 1 hour of Bitcoiners' attention that, you know, somehow they're worried that I'm going to like turn them all into big blockers or something. So yeah, I mean, it was a compliment to me, but it was great that Peter McCormick, he changed his mind. He said, okay, no guys, I'm going to stick to my original plan. I'm going to have Peter Risen talk about the Lightning Network and we had the show. And I think it went really well.
I did too. And that was also something interesting. So we wrote on CoinSplice about covering, you know, that beginning drama there, and we, you know, we thought, well, there it is. And then as I'm writing the damn thing, he goes and says, no, I'm gonna if he'll have me, baby, please. And I'm like, Wow. Okay. Well, again, that's kind of McCormick's charm, in that he's very raw and he's out there, and a part of being an everyman is kind of this new vulnerability where you, as an entertainer in the space, you kind of show, you know, sort of how the sausage is made, for lack of a better phrase. So I came to appreciate him, even though it was kind of frustrating. And I think it exposed a greater truth that, you know, for some of us who are, you know, notorious, you know, BCH or big block champions or partisans, you know, when we talk about censorship and we talk about the brigading and the bullying and the constant trolling that we get, people, I think, can from the outside kind of, oh, these guys are just babies. But then when you have someone who has street cred like McCormick going up there and going, Jesus, guys, I just want to talk to him. And they started using, you're giving Ryzen a platform, like you're some neo-Nazi that's running around threatening black people. It was wild. It was wild to watch him. Like, you do understand we're talking about math. Like essentially what we're getting into here is ones and zeros. Like, no one's going to die. So, that was very interesting. But good on you. I was kind of hoping in my more, you know, my crankier side that you would just go, hey, dude, you know, kick rocks. But you didn't. You accepted the invitation, and you characterized the interview as going well. I think it did too. He tried one. There's one small point though where he gets kind of aggressive, but it's minor. It's you know, he approached it in a way that he allowed you to speak, which was great.
And you gotta understand, like, from his point of view, he's trying to walk, you know, a really fine line, where he's trying to, you know, bring people like myself and other big blockers and other controversial people into his show, but at the same time, not alienate his audience, not alienate all these maximalists that are supporting him. So I think he kind of has to be a bit aggressive, and I was expecting that. So I didn't take offense to that.
And so you go on the show. It's an entertaining one, which we'll link to in the show notes. What has been the feedback since? How have you know, both sides taken it, as far as your understanding?
I think that, I mean, I feel that this whole episode around, you know, the controversy around me going on the show, the podcast we recorded, the discussion it generated in the community, I think that really helped to open up a lot of people's eyes to the limitations of the Lightning Network as a scaling solution, especially in a high fee environment. I like already I'm seeing more people from the Lightning side of things, you know, talking, in my opinion, more honestly about the limitations. And it was encouraging for me to hear Taj being interviewed by McCormick a couple episodes later.
Right.
And he echoed a lot of the things I said, so which was validating for me. Because, you know, I'm always worried, like, am I being too critical? Have I somehow lost my objectivity? But hearing Taj echo that back, I'm like, no, I think all my criticisms were totally fair.
And he's no slouch, Taj. He was, if not the principal, the main author of the Lightning white paper, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of a high praise, faint praise, however you want to characterize it. You came up with five fundamental flaws, and I sort of in the interim there, as you, I think you'd already either done the interview, and you're waiting for it to be finally published. You wrote an article and you started posting on Twitter, which I thought was a really good analogy. And I've been kind of dying to ask you how you stumbled upon it, which was kind of a string with beads. And mm-hmm. I, you know, even McCormick during the podcast, you know, kind of praised you for it and said, oh yeah, I read that and it cleared some things up for me or led to more questions. Can you kind of go into that a little bit and maybe why you think that became so powerful for people as a jumping off point to kind of understand where you're coming from?
Sure. So the background on that is Do you know who Captain Roger Murdoch? He's on Reddit and on Twitter now. Do you know that name?
Vaguely. It is familiar.
Okay, he's one of my favorite posters on Reddit, and he's also in DU Slack. So he, you know, the two of us were kind of working on a game plan for the interview with McCormick together, and he mentioned, you know, Peter, what you need is a really simple physical analogy for how the Lightning Network works. And he, you know, we were kind of bouncing some ideas off each other, and we came up with the beads on the string analogy. And I don't think I'm the inventor. In fact, now that I've done some more research, I know that other people have talked about the beads on a string analogy before. So this was an independent realization. But yeah, I think it's a really powerful analogy, because once you have that vision of beads on a string and the beads are strapped on these strings, the problems with Lightning become really obvious. So if I want to send a payment to you, and let's say I have a connection with Alice, Alice has a channel with Bob, and Bob has a channel with you.
Hey, Crypto Savages, this is C. Edward Kelso breaking in with a quick and very shameless plug. CoinSpice.io is a feisty pirate ship we depend to rely on almost entirely organic growth, which means our audience really does the marketing for us, and there's nothing more powerful than word of mouth. If you read an article you like on CoinSpice.io, if you listen to a podcast and you enjoy the content, or if you're just pissed, please promote us on social media, wherever you're at, wherever that is, whether it's Reddit, whether it's YouTube, Telegram, you name it, Twitter. Like us, retweet, all that great stuff. You can always find detailed show notes for every podcast on the corresponding page at coinspice.io. There you'll find links to our respective podcast, your favorite platform like iTunes. Please give us a rating. Please give us a subscribe. You know all that good stuff. It helps the pirate ship remain afloat. It keeps us going. We appreciate it. As always, you can contact me personally if you have questions, concerns, you want to hear from a particular guest, you have a news tip, at Kelso, K-E-L-S as in Sam, O, at coinspice.io. Thanks again for listening. We sure do appreciate it. And back to the episode.
I think a lot of people believed that the way Lightning works is I would send a coin to Alice. Alice would take that coin and send it to Bob. And then Bob would take that coin and send it to you. And if Lightning worked like that, it would make a lot of sense. And most of the problems that it's got in the podcast would disappear. But that's not how Lightning works. So the way it works is I have this string of beads with Alice, and I might have, you know, three beads on my side. So the first thing I do is I push one of those beads over to Alice. But that bead on Alice's side of the string is stuck there. She can't do anything with it other than push it back to me. But since she's now up one bead, she can take one of the different beads she has on her string with Bob and push it over to Bob. Now Bob can take one of the beads he has on his string with you and push it over to you. But this shows like the huge routing challenges with Lightning, because let's say I push a bead to Alice, Alice pushes one to Bob, and then Bob is now up one bead, but maybe he has no beads that he can push to you because they're already on your side of the string. Well, now the payment fails. So there's no way with pure Lightning payments for me to send a payment to you if you don't have sufficient incoming channel liquidity on your channel with Bob. And it's so that's why getting back to your question, I think the beads on a string analogy was so powerful because it's easy to understand once you see it like that. And it's also like, wow, I thought Lightning worked totally different. And now that I see how it works, it makes no sense. Like, basically, coins can't flow through the network. They can only move from one side of the channel to another.
And I remember you posted a graphic on Twitter, and I was kind of scrolling through, and I said, what witchery is this? And I clicked on it, and then you had an accompanying, I think it was a Medium post, and I read through it, and I don't know what I thought Lightning was before, but I walked away with a completely different understanding. And the idea that I had heard over the years now, and we've literally been discussing this for years now, that lightning is kind of an over-engineering of a problem that either doesn't exist or can be solved otherwise with regard to a simple, you know, in relative terms, block size increase. So I walked away with a way better understanding that maybe it is the case that this is, you know, kind of over-engineering gone amok. So I encourage people to get out and listen to that episode of What Bitcoin Did. Dr. Risen goes into five fundamental flaws. He fleshes them all out. McCormick has some really nice questions that he pushes back on. Risen is at his best, his absolute best, when he's not technical and talking to devs. So he's talking to me and regular people. And so, you know, inadvertently, I think, sort of the I can't think of a nice way to put it, but the cat's been let out of the bag, or, you know, the dam is starting to break with that episode, because there was so much controversy in the Streisand effect of, well, now I need to listen, and now I want to see if he plays gotcha with Risen also. So I think if you sit through it, it really, and again, it was baked in for me that I was distrustful or skeptical of Lightning. So you made it that much more clear for me. You know, and because I told you I'd only keep you for a short time here, I want to make sure I get into this idea, which is the May 15th Bitcoin Cash upgrade and BU's involvement. Kind of maybe take us through that and your general feeling on Bitcoin Cash and kind of where you see things now with BCH.
I'm really positive on BCH. I'm glad that, you know, I think there was some stuff with the last upgrade with BSV splitting off, but now that they're gone, I think we've really won that battle, and BSV is slowly falling down in market price. People are paying less attention to it, and I think that's a really good thing, because that, you know, adds more power to BCH itself. So I'm really positive for BCH now. The May upgrade, you know, obviously the big thing we're doing is adding Schnorr signature support. I think this upgrade is totally non-controversial. As far as I can tell, all the devs and most of the people in the community are in full support of it. So I don't think there's going to be drama like we had last time. So I think BCH has a great future. The only thing that I'm really worried about is there's always a sort of Damocles hanging over our head, because we are the minority hash power chain.
Right.
So that's what worries me most. You know, the BTC chain has 20 times the hash power that BCH has. And there's always this concern that, you know, maybe some group of people rent a bunch of hash power and do some reorgs or mine a bunch of empty blocks or do something to delegitimize BCH in the eyes of the broader cryptocurrency community.
And how worried are you about that this time around?
There was these Reddit posts the last couple of days about this unknown miner mining Satoshi Nakamoto and his Coinbase transactions, who's accumulated like 40% of the hash power. You know, and there's a speculation, oh, that's Calvin and Craig, they're going to attack again, or this is, you know, some Blockstream conspiracy to cause havoc on BCH. I don't know. I don't think there's any evidence that that's malicious hash power, but you know, it's always a bit of a concern, and I think we just have to do our best and deal with any problems as they come up. But the reality is, Bitcoin's security model is based around hash power. And if there's this huge pool of hash power mining on BTC that at any time can come over and cause havoc on our chain, you know, that's always a risk. And the only way to fix that is for the value of BCH to flip in BTC, and then we'll be the dominant chain. So I think that's what we got to work for. We have to, you know, convince the world and the broader cryptocurrency community that big blocks is the way to go. Satoshi's original plan for Bitcoin works, it can scale to global adoption already. There's no need for these complicated secondary layer solutions like Lightning Network. And I think if we can do that, then we'll have the highest market cap, the highest coin price, and the most hash power, and thus be the most secure chain.
So I spent the first part of the podcast here kind of moaning about all the baddies in BTC and the toxicity there that's very easy for me to point to and suggest and feel superior towards. However, you know, the Bitcoin Cash community, whereas I think is much healthier in some respects, has also run into its share of issues. And obviously we're talking about one of them as a result from November 15th of last year. But there's been some controversy with regard to Bitcoin Unlimited and some of the people there. So I'm not sure how much of that you want to get into. But I would be remiss if I didn't touch on it. For my side of things or our side of things, we tend to see lawsuits aimed at some of the developers on the BCH side as being an incredible affront, not just to the people that we like and we admire, but also to sort of the open source idea. And there was an accusation thrown about that at the very least, Bitcoin Unlimited was soft on this issue. And you've since written about it, and there's been some resignations from BU in terms of formal working relationship, although I don't think there's been a schism necessarily, from some higher level people. But let me just start there. So is there an official position? Is it maybe a red herring or straw man to say lawsuits BU that nothing to do with one another? How do you kind of what's your general feeling about all that I've characterized it?
Sure, I'll just give some of my perspective on what happened. So there was a lawsuit by some Florida company against, you know, Roger Ver, Jihan Wu, Omri, Sharma, Jason Cox, the ABC developers. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that this is basically Calvin and Craig suing ABC developers by proxy. It looks like they bought up this shell company just so they could launch this lawsuit. And I think this is terrible. You know, we reached out to the ABC developers to, you know, just say, you know, we sympathize with you, offered any support we could. I think it's sick that, you know, that open source developers who are, you know, trying to do what it takes to make Bitcoin Cash successful can be, you know, put through what in my opinion is a frivolous lawsuit like this. So yeah, I'm very sympathetic for those developers, and I think what happened is terrible. So where the controversy begins is some of the members in BU were happy about this lawsuit. And this kind of blew me away. I'm like, what are you guys? This is so sick, guys. Like, how can you be cheering on this lawsuit against ABC, Roger Ver, Jihan Wu? It just blew my mind. So that's what really caused the controversy in BU. And now BU is kind of split. Like, I wouldn't say we're split in half. I think probably three quarters of BU is, you know, thinks the lawsuit is terrible. Is no fan of BSV or Calvin and Craig, and, you know, wants to build Bitcoin Cash to be this peer-to-peer electronic cash system of the future. The other, I would say, quarter of BU is very sympathetic to BSV. They view Craig Wright as some brilliant person. They believe he's Satoshi Nakamoto. And all this action and attacks against ABC and BCH that they view as positive. So yeah, it's an awkward time for Bitcoin Unlimited because, you know, Bitcoin Unlimited is just a group of members, and like, how do we stop members from saying things that I personally disagree with? I don't think there's a way. So that's the problem as I see it. You asked if Bitcoin Unlimited had any official positions, and the answer to that is we can't really take an official position until we have a vote by the members. So coming up in a few days, we're going to be voting to drop support for BSV, for BTC, and I think even for BCH. I think someone might have put that up for vote too. So personally, I'm going to vote to drop support for BSV, and I'm going to encourage other people at BU to do the same. And if that vote passes, then we can say Bitcoin Unlimited's official position is that we do not support BSV, which I think will be a great thing and help heal within Bitcoin Unlimited and the broader BCH community.
It's a governance model issue. You've laid it out. And so do you know approximately when the vote will be taking place on those issues?
Yeah, I believe the vote opens on May 5th, and it will be open for 5 days. And we, Omni, the developer who discovered that CVE bug, the inflation bug in Core.
Right.
Yeah, he's the one who created this awesome voting system. So we all vote by digital signatures. So that'll be open for 5 days, and then we'll have the results. So by halfway through May, we should know Bitcoin Unlimited's official position on BSV.
Can I have a rain check here officially for maybe a couple months from now to kind of reconnect with you if you have time and update us again?
Yes, I'd be happy to come on again.
Very cool. Well, where can people find your work? We're going to link to it all in the show notes and all that you do.
The best way to keep in touch with me is on Twitter. I'm Peter Risen. And then I guess you can post some links to some of my recent work.
For sure. Well, again, thank you so much for all the time, for the generous answers. I really appreciate it, man. It certainly was a very deep honor. And thank you again.
Well, thank you. I had fun.